Welcome to the Reverse Alzheimer's Summit. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Sanderson, and so delighted to have Dr. Matt Pratt-Hyatt today. He received his PhD in cellular and molecular biology from the University of Michigan. He has over a dozen publications in well-known research journals such as PNAS and Cell Metabolism. He is focused on assisting with diagnosis and treatment of mitochondrial disorders, neurological diseases like dementias, chronic immune diseases, and more. He specializes in developing tools that examine factors at the interface between genetics and toxicology. His work is bringing new insight into how genes and toxicants interact and how they may lead to mental health disorders, chronic health issues, and metabolic disorders. He's currently working with the Mold Pros as a scientific advisor and interface with practitioners. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So mycotoxins and mold, tell us why, from your perspective, these are so dangerous.
Well, I mean, so obviously a lot of people like say that like mold is everywhere, everybody's got mold, but really it's only like we're talking about only a small subset of the mold species that we're very worried about. And they aren't growing everywhere. And you'll find like small numbers of them in a lot of houses, but when you see like large groups of them, then it starts like this, then you start, the toxins become overwhelming for most people. And that's where you start like forming a lot of different illnesses.
And so what we're talking about here at the Mold Pros, you guys mostly focus on the buildings that people live in or work in. And yep. A lot of our other experts that we've had on, they're really focused on the body and like the individual in front of them that might be sick from being exposed to mold. And then you guys are looking at sick buildings, if you will. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how much mold is reasonable. If you're saying mold exists in the environment naturally, what's reasonable and what's not?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's one thing that we really need to work with practitioners and with patients, is trying to figure out, is their home a normal environment, or is there things that are not quite right about it? Is it there's too much like Aspergillus, too much Penicillium? I mean, you know, these are like common molds that can overproduce that can cause an unhealthy environment. And like you said, like and I've talked with a lot of the like people that are on this group here, and a lot of them, we like view like patients as like a coin, and there's two sides of a coin. One side of the coin they help with is their body, but you can't really like fix the whole coin until you get the other side fixed too, which is their environment. That's one thing that we really work with, is like sending, like doing the proper inspection and doing the proper testing to figure out, is a home healthy? And if it's not healthy, why is it unhealthy? And what can we do to like prevent, like fix the unhealthiness and prevent new situations from occurring?
Great, so let's go back to those molds that are really highly toxic, because there's a ton of different types of molds out there. So yep. Which are the ones at the top of the list? You said Aspergillus and Penicillium, and then like black mold, like Stachybotrys.
Yep.
Cerium, that's another yep. one that can be highly toxic. Am I missing any?
Let's see here. You got Aspergillus, Penicillium, Ketotonium, Wollemia, Stachybotrys. Those are like the main ones that we see the most often.
Okay, so it'd be really important if somebody's coming in to test your home that they test for those, like as just like a foundational starting point. We need to make sure that those are going to be things that they look for.
Exactly. But I mean, I always like try to like say, like, if you're not looking for the toxins, then they're not looking at the whole picture, because all these different molds that we just talked about produce toxins. And it is a lot easier, actually, to find the toxins than to find the molds, which is not really intuitive, but that's the way, because the toxins are a lot smaller, so they'll flow through the house a lot freer than the spores will. So in the spores, a lot of times, especially for Stachybotrys is big, it's sticky, it's going to like stay in like very like hidden places. So sometimes you'll come in and you'll do an air sample, like a person will do an air sampling, or they'll do an ERMI test, or they'll do an HERTS-ME2, and all of those will come up negative, But then we like look at environmental mycotoxins, and those could be like through the roof. And
could those also still be through the roof after the mold's gone and you just haven't gotten rid of the mycotoxins yet?
That happens about 10 to 15% of the time when we get brought in, where a client hasn't, like, it's been like 3 to 6 months and the client's not really feeling any better, even though they're doing continuous treatment. We'll get brought in and we'll do a complete assessment. We don't find any spores, but we find huge amounts of mycotoxins. So then, like I said, happens about 10 to 15% of the time.
So not super frequently, but you make a really good point here, is that there's two different things that we're talking about. We're talking about the mold itself, which is a living organism. It's growing, it's eating, it's reproducing. It's usually living in a moldy, it's usually living in a water damaged part of your house, potentially, whether there's a leak or a plumbing issue or whatever it is. Go ahead.
Not necessarily. We will find Aspergillus in a lot of homes that just have high humidity in them. So the spores will find some, like, 2x4, especially in an attic space, they'll find somewhere where they can, like, find some type of food source. They'll start, like, forming hyphal structures into the wood. So to, like, start pulling off nutrients, but then they'll start pulling off humidity out of the environment. So if the humidity is over 60%, I'd say this happens in, like, 25 to 35% of the homes that we go into don't have any, like, history of water damage whatsoever.
Wow. Okay. That's news to me. I was expecting this just to come from essentially water damage from a leak in the roof or a leak in a pipe or something like that. But you're saying, no, it can just be high humidity. And so these places need to be, like, well ventilated. There needs to be air moving, or like a dehumidifier, something like that could be helpful if you live in a particularly humid environment, like, say, the Gulf States or tropics, like Florida, Hawaii, something like that. Okay. And then let's go back to this idea that, like, there's two components here. There's mold, which is living, breathing organism. And then there's the toxin that the mold produces. Yep. And for those of you who have heard me, I'm just going to say it one more time. Like, I go back to Botox, because everybody's heard of Botox, right? Like, this is something that people inject into their foreheads because it's neurotoxic. So it causes paralysis. And Botox is called Botox because it's botulinum toxin. So it's not the bacteria botulinum, but it's the toxin that is created by the bacteria that we then use aesthetically to prevent or reduce wrinkles, because it's neurotoxic. Again, because it hurts the nerve so much that it causes paralysis of the muscles. So the same concept is what's happening here, right? You have, like, in the case of Botox, you have botulinum, the bacteria that produces a toxin, Botox, what we inject. Yep. Here we have molds that are growing in building materials, and they produce a toxin that then gets into the air. So yep. Unknowingly, we're exposed through inhaling it, typically, right? Or maybe even on our skin. And these are very small. They don't smell, so you don't know that they're there. And there's no other great way to detect them other than what you guys do, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not a good way of testing for them, except for we use a laboratory test that allows us to measure how much environmental mycotoxins are in the environment, which is an important aspect of it. And like you said, these are things that the mold toxins are trying to fight against bacteria that are trying to take over the same environment, but kind of humans get caught in the crossfire between bacteria and mold in this aspect.
So tell me about the bacteria. Do we need to be concerned about bacteria that is also in water damaged buildings?
Yeah, I mean, not as much as I would say. I mean, I would say is mold, but definitely it's something to be aware of. And we do testing for that as well. I mean, multiple different species of bacteria we look at, especially like Actinomycetes. There's definitely been a lot more research being done on its prevalence and its production of endotoxins, which can then get absorbed into people and cause several different disorders.
Interesting. And then what about, so as we imagine mold and some bacteria eating up the 2x4s or the drywall. There's also volatile organic compounds that are chemicals that are released in that process. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so that's like the third thing that we really look for, because we will get recommended by a lot of like different practitioners. We'll come in, we'll measure the house. There isn't any like mold or bacteria in the house, but the patient is feeling sick. So what we'll do is we'll measure different VOCs in different rooms. And we have like a meter that indicates on a real-time basis of which room has the highest amounts of VOCs in it. And then if we find a room that has a lot more VOCs than other rooms, we can take a sample of that room, which then we can send into a lab, which will give us like a exact identification of what those VOCs are.
So what would be a typical place that VOCs would come from?
Carpeting, bed, like especially like foam mattresses, somebody that has like bought some new furniture, especially like something that's just been like varnished or or some type of like painted recently. Those are some of the common ones that we run to quite frequently. And sometimes it's like removing the furniture is like a real lifesaver for a lot of clients, which is really cheap. I mean, we really are happy when we find things like that, because those are like easy fixes to do.
Right. If you could just get rid of a couch or a chair versus having to like take your house down to the studs, that's a really different sort of investment in getting the house better.
Exactly. Exactly. But I mean, if you wanted to like talk, so talking about remediations is like the second half of what we do here. And we actually hardly ever take a house down to the studs, because we do a different way of remediation. We're kind of like new aged on this, where we do as minimal amount of tear out as possible, because we use an enzymatic blend that we purify from bacteria that actually have been designed to degrade molds and mold toxins. So we'll first do do tear out of drywall that just can't be reclaimed, and we'll sand down studs so that we can get rid of all those hypho fragments. But then we're gonna like fog the whole home and spray all the surfaces with our enzymatic blend, which will then help us reclaim a lot of the like area of the home, so we don't have to like tear out as much, and the client doesn't have to like get rid of all their clothes, doesn't have to get rid of their couches, doesn't have to get rid of toys. We can like degrade all these toxins in a way that is biologically safe without adding any VOCs into the environment.
I know that's going to sound like music to so many people's ears. So just to not have to get rid of so many things, to not have to do such disruptive work. So before we go fully into remediation, I want to understand what makes a really good home inspection. What is there like a checklist that somebody could go through with an inspection company that they're interviewing and ask, okay, are you looking for this? Are you looking for that? Do you test for this? What does your report look like? Like, how would you recommend someone that an home inspection company?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, we don't have like necessarily like a checklist, but we have we do kind of like mentally have a list of things that people have to like our technicians really need to look through. Cause myself as one of the scientists on board, I look through a lot of our reports that come in, and I'm looking through the pictures, I'm looking through the lab results. And so what do we really need? So first we need to start from the outside of the home. What's the landscaping look like? Is water draining to the home in a way that we really need to like talk to a landscaping company to like possibly like that are fixed? Do we need to like add some like French drains to the home so that not a lot of water is getting dumped into the basement? I mean, those are the first things that we look at. Then we're looking at like the roofing, or we're looking at siding. Do we see any like places where water might be coming in areas? And then we come into the house and we start at the top. We're going to be going from the top to the house to the bottom of the house. Either that's like a crawl space, a basement, a slab, whatever's the lowest point of the home, we're going to go from the top to the bottom. We're going to be measuring, your technician should be measuring humidity in every room, including the attic and basement. They should be doing moisture meters on all on pretty much every wall in the home. They should be taking infrared cameras throughout the home, making sure that there's no like temperature discrepancies. Now, sometimes those can just be a duct behind a wall and that can show like a blue or like show up like bluish on the camera. But sometimes that's water intrusion that you don't even know it's there because it's not causing any colorization, like discolorization. We're looking for like humidity buildup in the ducts. That could be like a source for mold as well. So then we're going throughout the home, and then we're going to make sure, like, try to figure out what type of before they even like you hire them, like what type of testing are they going to be doing? Are they just doing air samples? I mean, that's generally very frowned upon in the industry of just doing air sampling.
And tell me why, like what would they miss? That's
a great question. So you're like coming in, you like set up a tripod and it pulls in, it kind of like vacuums in air over a 5 minute period. And then it like attaches all those mold spores to a slide, which they like look at over under a microscope. We do those in our company because that allows us to like figure out which part of the house might be the worst parts. But it's not the end all be all that we like look at. And the reason why that's bad is because a lot of times molds will go through like a cycle, a life cycle where they're like, kind of like how dandelions will like grow up, they'll turn yellow, then they'll turn white, and then they'll sporulate. Mold is kind of like the same way where it's like growing, yellow, dandelions, poof. So you don't always see spores throughout the house, especially if the person's not like disrupting surfaces, then that could, you're definitely not gonna like find, especially like Stachybotrys, like I said, it's sticky, it's big, it doesn't really sporulate. So you're very rarely gonna find a large amount of Stachybotrys in the like spores in the air. That's the reason why I don't highly recommend it. It's not really, it's kind of like frowned upon of just relying on that in the industry. There's a lot of companies that are rentals that like to use companies that only do air traps because they do have they have very high propensity of giving you a false negative. So
right. So if you're a landlord and you have like a bunch of vacation rentals or something, your incentive is not to be super thorough with your testing because you don't want to be constantly fixing things, constantly looking for issues, constantly finding issues that are going to be costly to remediate. And people aren't there maybe that long or however you justify it. Now, if you're somebody who's living in a home and you feel sick, your incentive is very, very different, yep. Right? You want to be super thorough. And so what you're describing is the type of testing you would do if your health is your top priority.
Yeah, if you own the home or you're renting, you want to like make sure that the person who's coming in is being as thorough as possible, obviously. So then the next step, like the medium step, is doing like either an ERMI or a HERSMI, which kind of like it's like a dust collection, and then it looks like it does like what's called PCR, which is kind of like a DNA test for different types of molds. That way, like the HERSMI does four different molds, or is it five? And then the ERMI is like 36 different molds, and you kind of like do a score. And I mean, that's good. And we do ERMIs a lot too. And being able to like identify how many spores are in a home is helpful. But lastly, like I said, you really want to do that environmental mycotoxin assessment, which will like clue you in if there's a lot of like unseen, hidden like colonies of mold. Is it like growing behind your drywall? Is it growing in your basement that you don't even know it's there? Is it growing in your attic? But the toxins are floating throughout your house. That's why we really rely on that.
And tell me, where would you collect this from? So is this in an air sample or is this in a dust sample or where do you get this?
Yeah, so generally, there's two different ways you can do it. You can either like collect it from your HVAC system, which we like to do on that, because generally most of the, like I said, most of the toxins are floating freely throughout the home. So if they're floating freely throughout the home, they're going to be going through that air filter on your HVAC system. So we generally like collecting from there. If you don't have like central air, you can like take a Swiffer and like run along all the baseboards of your home. I generally don't recommend taking collections like underneath your like refrigerator, because dust will collect there for over like a very long period of time. And it doesn't really like give you a very good sense of what the real, it can give you like a kind of like a false positive, because it's just like, because you're like, Bill, you could have like years worth of collection there.
Got it. And then, okay, so does that feel comprehensive in terms of talking about what a test should look like in your home if you're trying to evaluate whether or not your house is sick, or your workspace too?
Yeah, I mean, we don't always, like, I'd say like about 20%, 10 to 15 to 20%, 10 to 20% of the time we're doing workspaces, like offices, schools, those type of things. Because, yeah, I mean, you need to be able to assess those. So, yeah, you definitely want, I mean, those are like the things that you really need to do on the pre and the post. Because we do whatever test shows a positive on the pre-test, we do on the post-test as well. Because that's the next like important thing if you're trying to evaluate a company.
This would be like pre and post remediation.
Yep.
Okay, so then let's talk about remediation.
Yeah, so remediation, you want to like make sure that all the mold is removed. Both physically, so physically, can you remove all the mold? Drywall, we generally, you want to have a company that's got pretty much like all drywall just needs to be removed. You can't really remediate drywall in any way. Now, 2x4s, you can sand down about 1/16th of an inch, which is how far hyphal fragments are going to grow in the 2x4s. You want to sand those down and make sure that those are completely removed. Secondly, a company is going to come in and bring air handlers in. Those air handlers are going to have filters in them. You want to make sure that they're using a filter that's OPA certified, which is about, it's like HEPA, but it's 3 times better. So it's down to 0.1 microns, which is going to like filter out all those hyphal fragments, spores, everything that's like small enough that's going to pass through a HEPA filter and still reside in the home. Lastly, you want to like make sure that like you have to ask your remediator, what are they going to do about the toxins? Are they using like bleach? Are they using like harsh chemicals to degrade the toxins? Are they using ozone, which doesn't really like, it works on toxins, but only at high, like if you can like highly concentrate it, which you really can't get over a large space. So if you like have like a box, you that you can like get like completely like air certified, like close it off, like vacuum it and put ozone in that, you can kill it. But for a whole home, you really can't get the ozone strong enough to degrade the toxin. So what are they doing for the toxins? Hydrogen peroxide is also a thing that I hear a lot tried to use for toxins. It's not really that effective, because it's these toxins, you have what's called a ring-like structure, and hydrogen peroxide just isn't like strong enough to break those covalent bonds in the ring-like structure of these mycotoxins.
Got it. And alcohol, like some people, yep. Yeah.
They'll kill, all these things will kill the bacteria, the mold, which is good, but also bad, because once those bacteria break, it's like a pinata of badness. So all those molds, all those toxins that was in that mold cell is going to like launch out. So I'd say like we, unfortunately, at least like once a month, we'll talk to a client that tried to do like work and do some of the work themselves and got really sick because they didn't have the proper PPE and they didn't have like the proper air handling and containment to do it properly.
Yeah, there's a reason to get a professional involved here, especially if you're already feeling a little bit sick, because you can get sicker. The house can get sicker. You, especially as you start adding these chemicals on top of it. Now you're exposed to the chemicals, plus maybe even some increased toxicity, as you're describing, as all of these bacteria and molds start to degrade, they are releasing more toxicity. So then what you guys do is this enzymatic process. So break that down for us. What is an enzyme? What does that mean?
That's also a great question. I sometimes forget, as a scientist, everybody knows what an enzyme is, but enzymes are kind of like little machines that our body makes, or any like living organism makes. And it'll go around your body, like it's like encoded in your DNA to like make these little machines, and all the different little machines have different jobs to do. So bacteria, they have enzymes that, like, some enzymes like carry food to like other parts of the cells, but other enzymes are made to like fight against these toxins that the molds are making. So like you have like a mold or a bacteria that's trying to like grow in the same area next to a mold cell, and the mold's like shooting off these like war like missiles at it of toxins. So the bacteria has to like degrade these toxins in a way that's safe, that makes them safe for the bacteria. So it's all it's doing is kind of like a fancy pair of scissors. It's just chopping those covalent bonds up, making like what used to be like one molecule into like three harmless molecules, so that they're like safe to like breathe in or digest or anything else that might be necessary.
Got it. And so you guys use this enzymatic process to get rid of the toxins in the environment. And then this sounds like kind of a shortcut for a lot of my patients, a lot of people that we work with who are trying to get rid of mold from their homes and worry, like, can I keep my grandma's furniture? Can I keep my clothes, you know, all my jackets for the winter that I don't want to have to replace? Can I keep the shoes? So talk me through kind of how you evaluate what people can keep, what they need to get rid of, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So almost everything people will put things in like Tupperware boxes and we'll fog inside those. Most things we can keep. Only things that we can't treat are paper products, because our blood, liquid elements to our blend, which keeps the enzymes stable and technically alive, but functional. So we have to have those in there. So it's kind of like a liquid-based blend. So we can't treat paper. So sometimes we recommend people put all those into Tupperware, take those boxes like outside to like open up. If you really need to like have those, let's say old pictures or like love letters that you saved from high school, whatever they are. If you really need to like hold on to those, put them in Tupperware, take them outside when you like, it's a nice day out, open them up so that there's like a, you kind of like are kind of like diluting out the toxins, so you're not getting a big like breath of them if you're like in a small room. And then look at them that way, like take them out on the deck, take them out in your driveway, take them somewhere where you can get a lot of like air moving around.
Yeah, and sometimes I also say like just close that up and put it in your garage or put it in storage somewhere. And then when you feel better, you can open it up. And if you get sick right away, that's a sign. Maybe you need to just get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's true too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is really, really helpful. I'm so glad our listeners are getting the benefit of like, what do I do? So I do want to tie this back into dementia. I know a lot of our other guests have done that, but from your experience as a scientist working with both on the testing side for, you know, when people are looking at urinary mycotoxins, and then also looking at on the home inspection side, what have you seen with the patients or the clients that you've helped in terms of their cognitive function when it relates to these mold and mycotoxin exposures?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a big, it's definitely something that I have to like train a lot of our staff for, to have that aren't like deal with it. Cause like a lot of clients are like dealing with like brain fog. We really have to like teach them, like you might need to like repeat this thing two or three times, because I mean, it's been shown that these mold toxins do like several different things. They're degrading white matter in the brain. They're causing the synapses to be degraded, So you have definitely our clients, unfortunately, are predisposed for cognitive decline. So we see it a lot.
See them get better as they get rid of the mold toxins?
Yes, definitely. So I've talked to a lot of different clients I've been doing this for about 8 years now. And I can tell you that a lot of times people will, they'll get into the industry, they'll become an advocate because they used to be on that side of the aisle of, they used to be a former client and now they're a health coach, they're a therapist, they're doing something to try to help people through this. And they understand what the process, because it's not like a one day thing and you're done type thing. It is obviously your clients are all very aware this is a 3 months, 6 months, 12 month, 18 month process, depending on the genetics, how long you've been living in this. It takes different amounts of time for different people.
Right. That's such a good reminder. And I think also in the context of reversing dementias, this is one piece of the puzzle, right? We still need to get potentially infections out of the system, other toxins out of the system, good nutrients involved, lots of exercise, great sleep, all of those fundamental pieces also need to be there, in addition to making sure that that's a clean, healthy, healing environment that you're in.
Oh yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, there's a lot of these pathways, I consider it a detox, it's like a tunnel and only so many things can go through that tunnel at once. So if you're dealing with heavy metals and toxins, I mean, they only can go there. They're two cars trying to fight to get through that tunnel at the same time. The same way with pesticides, herbicides, all these things are going through that tunnel and only so many cars can go through it at a time.
Right. Such a good point. So tell us where in the world do you help patients, residents, participants, clients, where do you help people?
Yes.
Are you all over the US, Canada, just part of the?
Unfortunately, we're only in the United States. We do sometimes send out product to Canada and some other locales, just our enzymatic blend. But we only have inspectors or remediators in the United States.
And all over the US?
We don't do any work in the state of New York and Washington, D.C., but we are licensed throughout the rest of the United States.
Excellent.
And we have locations throughout the country. So if somebody wanted to find how to contact us, then go to our website, themoldpros.com, and we have a site there that says Find an Inspector. It'll clue you into what the nearest office is to you.
Great. So MOLD, mold pros, PROS.
Yep. So themoldpros.com.
Excellent. And that'll be in the show notes as well. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really eye-opening and really hopeful, I know, for our listeners to think that there's a way to test, there's a way to treat and get this out of their home so that they can really live in a healing environment and take really good care of their brains. So again, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Any other parting thoughts?
No, thank you. But thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate being able to share this information with your patients.
Always a pleasure running into you at conferences, getting to listen to your lectures. I've learned a ton from you over the years. And every time we interact, I get another little nugget of something that will help a patient. So deep gratitude to you.
Oh, I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you so much.